Hello, folks. Welcome to Marvel Noise. I'm your host, David Price. Thank you for joining me today. You are going to hear from Steve and Jerry. They're going to talk about Tomb of Dracula. And there's even a little bonus, audio bonus, that Steve includes in that segment. So they're going to get to that in a little bit. First, I'll just run through a few things that that I read recently, including Karnak number one. I mentioned it at 11 o'clock comics this week. Basically, kind of just, I didn't know what to expect. Well, it's not true. It's written by Warren Ellis, so I had some idea of what to expect. But the art is by Gerardo Zaffino, and your colorist is Dan Brown. It looks amazing. I'm not the biggest Inhumans fan, as far as, you know, them being strong enough to carry their own title or to be in the forefront. That was, they were friends of the Fantastic Four. That was my, pretty much my introduction to them, thanks to John Byrne. So, they had a unique look, but, you know, I mean, Gorgon and Medusa and Karnak never really just floated my boat. And the, I thought Lacho was neat. I dug Black Bolt's look. But the whole thing about the royalty, and I guess I just didn't know a lot about what made the Inhumans inhuman. And in recent years, obviously, with Infinity and with the Terrigen Mists, and it's things, I'm being more aware of how, I guess, important, in air quotes, the Inhumans are. And I figured, it's written by Warren Ellis, the art looks pretty snazzy, I'll give Karnak a shot. I forgot about the death. I went in fresh. I went in new, no clue, no baggage. And I was, I guess, pleasantly surprised. I really enjoyed it. I like the idea of Karnak. He finds the flaw and can exploit it. And that is, that's a unique ability. But in this issue, he takes things to a bit of an extreme, I'll say. So I enjoyed it. I think you should check it out. It's not it's not your typical Marvel fare, but it's not Spider-Man. It's not Captain America. It's a little bit on the darker side as far as, and it's not overly graphic, but Karnak can take it to the extreme, and he doesn't, there's no sugarcoating it, there's no tiptoeing around it. He will do what he has to do. It's whatever it takes to get the information, to do whatever he needs to do. That's what he's going to do. He's just going to, the straightest point, the shortest distance to get to that is what he's going to take. There are no, there's really no gray area with him. I enjoyed that. Read the second issue of Invincible Iron Man, Bendis and Marquez and Justin Ponsor on colors. It was, it continued the story. You know, it was a, you know, where we kind of, it wasn't really a cliffhanger, but where we ended the first issue, pick up right where we left off. Not really sure how I'm feeling about Friday just yet. But the whole, mystery and what do they need it for, and Madame Mask completely losing it. There have just been things about Tony's love life that I've never really been thrilled with in all the years. So this isn't really a new thing, but I am liking this Iron Man book. Two issues in, still good stuff. If you haven't checked out the first issue, and if you're a member of the Marvel Collector Corps and you haven't read the first issue, it is included in this current box is shipped last week. It's the villains box, which was pretty neat. And yes, so Invincible Iron Man number one is in that box. So you can read it that way if you have not chosen to pick this issue up. But the third one I just actually read today, that was Secret Wars Agents of Atlas, written by Tom Taylor, and your art is by Steve Pugh, and colors are Tamara Bonvillain. So this, I believe this was a one-shot, or at least it kind of should be. And it's not exactly the happiest story. Baron Zemo looked like, well, Baron Zemo looked like somebody you didn't want to try with, but I liked how a lot of things were touched on. I mean, it was Agents of Atlas, the Agents of Atlas that you're pretty much familiar with as far as written by Jeff Parker. It's in this battle world, the Baron is Zemo. There's rescue mission. There's Phil Coulson. It is a, I liked it. It was a good issue. It was, the art's fantastic. It reminded me of the old Agents of Atlas stories. I appreciated that. I thought it was really well done. It didn't even really have to be a Secret Wars tie-in. This could have been a regular Agents of Atlas tale set in a non-Secret Wars era. I thought it just it was fitting. Cover's amazing. Cover's by Leonard Kirk, who of course drew the Agents of Atlas miniseries way back when, and also Captain Britain and MI-13. Fantastic artist. Cover looks great. The interiors look great. I really, really like this issue. I think you will too. There are Zemo's secret weapons, plural, were pretty neat. I appreciated the connection to Secret Wars, because if things happen, you know, you don't know if Doom will show up, you'll get some Thors. So they did make that connection, but still, overall, the story itself could be could have taken place anytime. And there were some definitive consequences to some actions in it. So, like I said, it wasn't a overly happy tale, but it was still a good, solid tale. So I'm going to stop yammering on for now. I'm going to let Steve and Jerry do their thing. We will be back in a couple weeks. And well, hope everybody had a happy Halloween. And like I said, get ready for some Tomb of Dracula. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
Hey, vampire hunters. Operatives of Dr. Sun, Steve Raker, and Jerry McDade here, again from the bowels of the comic book bunker, where we've got the next chunk of Tomb of Dracula issues to bleed over for you. Hi, Jerry.
Blah. Hello, Steve.
You can find Marvel Noise on Facebook and on Twitter at Marvel Noise, and me at Steve Raker, and Jerry at Jerry_McDade.
That's me.
Yeah. The material that we are covering here, and I think we failed to mention it last time, but it is available in black and white form in the Tomb of Dracula Marvel Essentials. It's available in three volumes of the Tomb of Dracula hardcover omnibuses. Actually, the third volume, it's cool, it's all the black and white mags. But no X-Men stuff, Jerry.
Boo! The best Dracula stories ever told.
But the Tomb of Dracula omnibuses, they're the tomes of Dracula, I would say.
That was going to be my joke. I was saving that one.
But it's all on the Marvel Unlimited digital service, too, which is really handy.
That's right. Including one tie-in issue.
Which is very helpful.
Yes.
We basically have a cast of seven, to remind you from last episode. Eight. We have Dracula himself, Lord of the Undead, who's risen in modern times and has been stalking around London while his castle gets refitted after being burned down.
It's a bad day. And then we have who? Sleepy, Doc, Dopey, Sneezy.
Pretty much. Frank Drake, who is one of Dracula's descendants, and he inherited Dracula's castle and went to investigate it, and his friend Clifton, originally Graves, accidentally pulled the... well, he didn't accidentally, he did it on purpose. Jerry, you don't ever pull the stake out.
Never pull out the stake.
He pulled the stake out of Dracula and revived him into this modern age. We have Rachel Van Helsing, who is a descendant of the original Van Helsings, who were vampire hunters. We have Taj, her large in stature, but quiet, mute, what would you call him, a accomplice?
Yeah, team strongman, tank, and if you will.
Quincy Harker, who is another descendant of Jonathan Harker and Mina. Who were from the original Dracula tale. And he, too, is a vampire hunter, although he does it more with funds and technology because he is wheelchair-bound and getting on with age. And he
imagine if Tony Stark and Charles Xavier had a baby.
And he has a daughter, Elizabeth, who does reaches the shelves he can't reach.
And he is always coming to join her.
And the last fella is issue 10, where we met Blade, and he is the famous vampire hunter who lives on in Marvel continuity to this day, and had the movies and all that fun stuff. So, and that was just last issue that we were introduced to him, and he's right out of the 70s, like, blaxploitation vibe.
Yeah.
And, Jerry, I missed your comment about Storm and Dracula last episode, and it was a good one. But it's funny because, you know, you having so much X-Men karma coming along with you from doing the Great Expectations podcast and covering all those Claremont and Cockrum Byrne issues, you know, Dracula went on to appear in a couple of important X-Men issues, an issue and an annual that were handled by Claremont and Bill Sienkiewicz, and it featured the fate of some of these characters, which
yes.
is kind of cool. So how cool is it to go back and see how some of these characters were, you know, started?
Yeah, you know, I think that Sean and I on Great Expectations kind of talked about the missing impact for us not having been Tomb of Dracula readers. You know, like we were reading on a different level than somebody who was following these characters through the 70s would. So the emotional impact, because I think the issues were well written, was there, but not to the level that it would be for a fan of this book.
Because, like, you know, spoilers, Wolverine kills Rachel Van Helsing right in the old, you know, in the sunset, and she burns in his arms, and it's crazy.
But it's beautiful, man. There's just something about Wolverine and sunrise and deaths, isn't there?
It really is. It casts a great shadow.
Never happened.
And the other thing that I was thinking of that you were talking about last time is Dracula being presented as a quasi-hero in some situations. And we joked about his color scheme that's particularly always made sure to be really promoted on the covers. The red and black together, right? The red and blue together that we know from Spider-Man and Superman.
Are we calling this blue or are we calling it black blue?
Yeah, you know how comics are. If you got black hair, it's going to have those blue highlights, right?
That's right.
But at the same time, for me as a kid, Dracula was also being sort of presented among the heroes because of those Mego action figures. Do you remember they had a line of some of the Universal monsters, Dracula included?
So I do not remember that.
No.
We were never Mego kids. I never owned one in my life. Closest I guess I got was Micronauts. They both start with M.
A bear stole some of my Migos right out with a backpack of mine when I was like 6 or 7 years old and we were backpacking in the woods. My dad and the ranger were going back to find, like, our stuff.
Chase that bear off.
Yeah, exactly. Pretty funny. Anyway. All right, so we're
your dad is a good guy.
We're going to cover issues 11 and up through 21 with a little surprise crossover in the middle. And all of these issues are written by Marv Wolfman and drawn by Gene Colan. And everything but 11 is inked by Tom Palmer. So it's the team supreme. And the book is now monthly. And these issues cover the summer of 1973 through the spring of 1974.
Hey, and the arrival of Jerry McDade. Ooh. How about that?
I was just starting to read comics in 74.
All right. That was a good year.
Yeah. All right. So in issue 11, we have Dracula. He's just left the exploding sea vessel that he left Clifton Graves on board to blow up, and the rest of the cast all overboard in the drink.
Editor's note, for more details, see issue 10.
Dracula, he's tired, but he fights his way flying to one of his safe houses in Britain, somewhere near London, and crashes to sleep.
Just in the nick of time. And, you know, this happens more often than you would think for a vampire that's lasted 500 years or whatever it is. The near misses are really adding up, and eventually I think it's going to cost him, Steve.
Yeah, he's always like, curse me for a fledgling vampire. Like, I should know better my 500 years. But he's also, before he crashes, though, he's thinking back to that motorcycle gang led by the brawny towel guy.
Yes!
Who, like, they beat the crud out of Drac. Dracula was weakened at the time, but they beat him senseless and dumped him in the river. And he's going to go get those guys, Jerry.
That's right. Paybacks.
Well, small world, turns out that biker gang has been hired to be thugs for a fella named Jason Faust. And this guy, Jerry, he's in this big iron lung that looks like a big MRI tube with just his head sticking out.
Yeah. And he's got these gigantic robotic arms.
Yeah, they're like Spider Slayer arms, like the original old Smythe arms.
Yeah, and my favorite thing about this character's design is that he's lying flat on his back in this iron lung, and only his head is sticking out, and he's got this, so he can only look straight up, but he's got this mirror that's, you know, kind of pointing out so he can see in the room behind him.
Yeah.
And they're always drawing his reflection in, and it's kind of like Charlie 27's face through his little window shield thing.
Absolutely.
His helmet.
I was thinking of it, still thinking of the Spider Slayer, and thinking of it like Jameson's face on the little monitor, you know?
That
it's set up that way so that people see him right side up, his face at least, and he can be more menacing when he's yelling commands at you. And he's hired the biker gang to get revenge on his enemies with him. And he's got a lot of enemies.
A lot. And he's made a new one on the streets of London by splashing giant puddles onto our heroes.
Yeah. Rah, curse you. And we also learned that the Burt Reynolds Marlboro Man biker guy's name is Brand. So we finally have a name for him.
Oh, hey, before we go too much farther, this Faust guy, I want to say that last name is not an accident. But I couldn't put together the influence for the classic tale of Faust.
Yeah, ditto.
I know it's there, Steve.
Yeah, I don't know. It might have been a cool name, but it seems like there should have been a deal in there made somewhere.
Yeah. Let's just pretend that we're pseudo-intellectuals and we know what's going on.
Yeah.
Everybody will believe us, right? Cut that out, Steve.
Well, remember, too, legend has it that Marv Wolfman was not that well-received on his first few writing assignments. And I think Marv himself has corroborated this, and that getting the Tomb of Dracula job was sort of like his last shot.
His deal with the devil?
And sure. There's your no prize, Jerry. I think he was finding his way, but this is the gig that got solidified his career, honestly, and gave him legs to do the other stuff. That and the editor-in-chief changing like 5 times in 6 years.
Yes, great story.
But so we learn that Faust ends up in the iron lung, with the little robot arms, when a business venture in Haiti went sideways on him. And he fell into the clutches of the Hex Man, Malodoui.
Yeah.
And Malodoui tortured and paralyzed Faust, and Faust was eventually rescued by government troops, and all the torturing was done with voodoo. So, surprisingly, Faust learned a lot of voodoo along the way.
Well, you learn a few things when you're being tortured. I speak from experience.
You become a keen observer of detail. Well, Faust uses his little robot arms to make these golden figurines of his victims and does the classic voodoo doll, you know, poking it with pins thing. And he does it remotely from his iron lung while Brand and his gang of thugs are all on scene to, tell the guy why it's happening to him, basically.
Yeah, they're there to put their finger in his face and go, yeah.
Now you know who's doing this, do you? So Dracula's on the prowl, and he finds what turns out to be a repentant member of the gang, who left the gang once they started working for Faust. And he ends up letting him live. And I was thinking maybe that's because he looks like he's drawn to look like Roy Thomas.
Oh, I didn't even pick up on that, but I'm sure that's it.
As soon as I saw it, it's like, oh, it's Rascally Roy. But the information he gets leads him to victim number six's house, just as Brand and his band arrive there. And it turns out it's Quincy Harker's house.
Uh-oh. It's about to go down now, Steve.
And it's funny because this was foreshadowed, too, earlier when they showed the arm reaching in to get the next figurine, the next voodoo doll. Like, the next one in line was the little bearded guy with the glasses and the hat. And sure enough, that's Quincy. So, unfortunately, Quincy's the one who suggested to Faust to go to Haiti in the first place, so he's got to pay.
Yeah, well, the whole thing was his idea. Of course he'll pay.
Drac, he kills a couple of the bikers and hypnotizes the other to ride like the wind.
As far as they can. Off the cliffs of Dover.
Yep, and just keep going. Keep hitting the throttle.
And I love they show his red eye, and then they show them leaving the room kind of through his red eye.
Yep.
You know, and everything's all in red, and he just watches them walk off to their doom.
Giving him the stink eye.
Wolfman is, if nothing else, very skilled at creating creative fates for these people. You know, he loves killing people.
Oh, well, who's left, though, is Brand. And Dracula turns him into a vampire and then sicks him on his own employer in the Iron Lung. He was ready, though, wasn't he?
He was ready. He knew that his henchman was going to turn on him, so he just happened to make a voodoo doll of him.
He hadn't embossed it in gold yet.
No, it's still fresh.
But he stabs the doll anyway, but even though Brand is quicker and sinks his fangs into his master, so they both kind of die simultaneously.
And this is the ironic twist, is that he dies. So this is the ultimate revenge for Dracula, the final payback. Faust dies, but then becomes alive again, undead. But now he's still trapped in this iron lung until the sun rises.
Oh, man.
And he turns to dust and dies again.
Oh, never should have had the guys point him towards the window so he could see the sunrise.
He can't even see it, Steve. Oh, that's the irony. He's turned the wrong way.
Through the mirror that he can no longer even see his face in.
It's pointing to the other end of the room. I'm going to put that one on Abel Jack Abel. I think he had the page backwards when he inked it.
Funny. All right. Issue 12 starts with Jack Dracula feeding, and it's being interrupted by Quincy Harker and company. And, I mean, he smacks them around for a few pages pretty effortlessly, and then kidnaps Harker's daughter, Elizabeth.
Not happy, Steve. She's a babe. I don't want anything bad to happen to her.
And he's, you know, being pretty frank with her. He's admitting to her that the team, the Scoobies there, they're a nuisance that keeps them from being able to focus on other things. So, it's time to put a little thought into, getting them out of his hair. So he's going to set a trap and use her as bait. And he calls Blade, even. Interrupts his date with Saffron.
Yeah, can't be doing that.
Yeah, not cool, you dig. And he lures them all to a house called the Whispering Hell, which is probably a lovely bed and breakfast in the, when it's in season. But now, not so much.
No.
Frank, Quincy, Taj, and especially Rachel, they enter and they get attacked by bats. Like, really attacked by bats. Rachel gets her face all clawed at pretty good. That's going to leave a mark, Jack.
Yeah, there's no coming back from bat scratches. She's got bat scratch fever.
And Drac keeps taunting them with glimpses of Elizabeth, so that the pursuit and the chase is on. He's setting little traps for them, like throwing Black Widow spiders out.
And every time he pulls her away, her dad yells to her, "Elizabeth, I'm coming to join you."
This is the big one, baby.
I'm going to wear that one out. You watch.
Well, Blade.
That's for you, Steve, by the way.
I appreciate it. I'm a big fan of Grady.
Yeah.
Blade arrives right in the room with Dracula, catching up to him, and takes him on physically. Blade manages to use the tip of one of his stakes to scratch up Drac's face.
Just the tip.
Yep. And it sends him fleeing. Boom, he's gone. So, woohoo, they get Elizabeth back.
Yay! Whew. Steve, I was so worried.
Oh, man.
What? Dude. Steve, what?
She's... Now I know why they keep showing her in the shadows. She's been turned.
No!
She can't bear it. She forces her father's hand and jumps down, knocks herself unconscious, and Quincy has to stake her. And Frank vows to kill Dracula again. I will kill you.
Yeah, man. This is gut-wrenching. I think this would have torn me up as a kid.
12, 13, and 14 are a three-parter trilogy also. And so the second part is issue 13 here, which opens with the aftermath of them, holding Elizabeth's dead body and everything. Another thing, Dracula has been shown the last two issues interrupting muggings as part of his feeding. The first time, he ignores the girl and takes on the thug in sort of a, like you were saying, in that quasi-heroic way, right? He's going to take out the bad guy.
Right.
The second time, he just pulverizes the thug. And then he leads the girl into the shadows and drinks, but just enough from her to quench his thirst and wipe her memory of this other, unpleasant evening. And then he makes her his slave for the future, too. But in the meantime, she can live her own life.
Now, it's killing me because I don't think I've read far enough ahead to see if this ever comes into play. I want to know.
I think this is just his MO, that's their way of qualifying his killing. He didn't kill her. He drank just a little bit. Just the tip.
Just the tip.
So then Dracula goes and he catches a boxing match. And he finds it pretty barbaric and pretty sweaty. And leaves it behind like pop culture has eventually between then and now.
Yeah, we upgraded to UFC. it's less barbaric.
There's also this side story going on of these Chinese agents, Mr. Lo and Mr. Chen among them. And they are, they wear ties and trench coats, soggy hats because it's always raining.
They're businessmen, Steve.
They are working for a Dr. Sun, all right? And they're searching for a vampire body, and they find one in Brand, the dead biker guy, after bribing the coroner. What does Dr. Sun want with a vampire? Well, we'll find out soon enough, true believer. No.
Steve, you know what? I gotta come clean. I didn't pick up that was Brand.
Oh.
This is. I like it.
But yeah, so they bribe this coroner and they get the vampire. You can just, in the way that Marvel has established their vampire lore, that you can just pull the stake out, right? And he could be revived, so to speak. Although his was a voodoo stake, so we'll see what Dr. Sun can whip up. But also, we get Blade relating his origin story, which by now is pretty well known. But he tells the Scoobies here he was literally killing his mother in childbirth. And her three friends, I call them the Harpies, they call a doctor to assist in the childbirth. But the doctor, he's a vampire. And he kills her in childbirth and leaves before Blade is born. Because the Harpies come running in and he takes off before he can take the baby.
Now, there's no connection between this doctor and the doctor from earlier in issue 6 or 7 or whatever that was.
No. Okay. This is a doctor that was Blade's mission to hunt down.
Okay.
He's got this quest going on that I honestly don't know if he ever succeeds or not, but I'm assuming he does because it keeps getting brought up that's something he's putting on the side burner when he's helping Harker and gang, and then he's something he keeps wanting to get back to and talking that he's going to leave to go do and that sort of business. The gang, they get a tip that, just the tip, that a large bat has been seen repeatedly flying south. And they use that information to triangulate Drax's position and catch up with him. And on this page, Jerry, there's a guy with a bow tie and book that isn't identified and just shown. But it's odd because he's a character we're going to see again in the next issue.
You're right.
Well, Blade engages Dracula again and just is getting beaten on. It's just no contest. Taj, he gets thrown through the window and two stories out into the churning waters below the mansion that none have ever survived.
Oh, Taj.
Yeah.
I love Taj. He just throws himself in there no matter what. He's no fear.
Throat in there, throat out of there.
Yeah, well, he never wins, but I like his moxie, Steve.
Drac also calls upon the hypnotized villagers that he has to swarm the mansion. Rachel has this move where she attacks Dracula while Blade is already engaging Dracula.
Mm-hmm.
And Drac's like, hey, good move. He actually identifies it as a good tactic. So they do it again. Quincy distracts Dracula with his, those wheelchair armrest darts that he loves. And while Dracula is faced him, Blade sneaks up behind him and gives Drac the stake right to the heart.
He's finally done it.
They've killed Dracula. The third issue in the arc, issue number 14, starts off with the hypnotized minion villagers. They're still enthralled, and they are swarming the group because they're going to take their master away before the gang can behead Dracula and end his threat forever. Because you can pull the stake out, but you can't put the head back on, Jerry.
Right.
I mean, this is pretty smart of Dracula, right? To do this, to get his body removed. Except, like, he neglected to take that poison dart out of his shoulder? That we talked about last episode, he neglects to tell them to take the stake out as soon as possible. And it takes too long. He turns into skeletal remains and dust. And when that happens, he loses his control over the townspeople, who totally just run off and leave his body there.
Whoops.
So, who should find Dracula's corpse? But a bow-tied, Bible-carrying, down-and-out preacher. This guy, Jerry, he blames everything except his own grandiose neuroses for an ever-shrinking flock of followers. He thinks that finding this casket with his body in it is like a sign from heaven, and it's just what he needs to hype how powerful he is. He somehow intuitively knows that if he pulls the stake out, Jerry, don't pull the stake out ever.
I tried to tell him.
If he pulls the stake out, the figure will return to life, and he plays it up. We need to post flyers about this, right?
Yeah. You know, Steve, I'll bet he's probably going to feed it after midnight, too.
He's Josiah the Revivalist, he's claiming to be. And there's flyers all around town. And there's even a picture of Dracula's body on the flyer. And, of course, our gang scope this out. And they race to the scene, but it is too late. Dracula is revived. It's not within 2 seconds, Jerry, that Dracula confirms the mistake that Josiah made. It's like, no, I am a Hellspawn. Ha ha ha, you know? But he's pretty quick. And he and his followers get their crosses out, and they turn on Drac. And it's not until Dracula calls upon that weather power of his that he can get himself out of it.
You know, he's always got that ace up his sleeve. Just when you think you've got him, he pulls out another power that you forgot about.
Yep, a lightning strike right to the cross that Josiah is holding. And it fries him, but not before Dracula can tell him off a little bit. Then he turns into a bat and he flies off, ending the arc.
Aww.
It's okay, Jerry. There's more.
Lesson learned, I hope, everyone.
Issue 15 is a done in one. It's the first of Dracula's diary issues, where he recounts and transcribes memories and stories from his past as he sits and adds to his journal. And we learn that on his way home from killing the preacher, who revived him, he got shot while in bat form.
It's not been a good day for him.
The hunter who shot him, he gets him back pretty good. He throws him around like he likes to throw people. He's like, you ever see how like the killer whales, the orcas, sometimes play with the seals first before they eat them, and they like throw them around a little bit?
Oh, Steve, too sad, too sad.
Dracula does this with his food, like prey, with his prey. But he doesn't actually eat this guy. He decides, actually, I'm going to make it a little worse for you, and he just takes off. And then the rats come. But they're not coming to get him. They're herding him towards a pack of wolves, Jerry.
I don't know which is worse, Steve.
Yeah, that'll be the end of him. Dracula also tells the story of turning a murdered bride to a vampire so that she could kill her murdering, two-timing, money-hungry creep of a husband. This whole issue, it reads like a Tales from the Crypt type of a thing with all these little things, you know?
I really dug this one.
He also tells the story of how he was once tricked by this ancient dude who promised Dracula this pool of blood, but surprise, he spoils it before Dracula can get the benefits of it.
This one was my favorite. It's so cool. Such a cool idea for a story. You know, it's what, 5 or 6 pages, but just a fun read.
And you know, some of these
Did you mention that the pool of blood is all of the blood from all of humanity throughout history or something like that?
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
The blood of all those who have ever died in the history of this world. That's cool.
And the ancient dude, because he knows his time is finally ended, he wants to take the pool with him so that no one else can use it. And so he brings the most likely person to misuse it right there. Just so he can pull it out from under his grasp.
And nearly takes him out.
Some of these stories, too, they confuse me regarding the timeline as stated in the early issues. That, like, Harker had staked Dracula and he slept for 60 years until Clifton pulled out the stake. Because,
right.
Especially Drac's final memory here is of this giant red-bearded Scotsman who hunted Drac to the castle and staked him. And says that he's the one that staked him for Clifton to find. But even though he staked him, Dracula didn't die before being able to throw him into the hole with the cover that he found Clifton in. And it's now identified as the Pit of Death. The Pit of Death even gets a footnote.
You gotta have it.
I love Roy Thomas. All right, 16 is another done in one. Here we have the mystery of this trench coat wearing skeletal ghoul who's haunting these targets that eventually connect to who his identity is. This is a real villain of the month type issue. Dude is strong, though, Jerry. He can rip open a safe. He can choke two men simultaneously. He can crush a guy's skull in one hand.
I can do all that, Steve. I just choose not to.
He can even go toe-to-toe with Dracula in a physical confrontation. A few times.
Not to mention, he's the creepiest-looking monster in any Marvel comic ever.
He is good. Inspector Chelm good old Inspector Chelm of the Yard.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
He thinks the ghoul is Dracula because of the fact that they're finding these victims around. So he calls in Harker and company, but by the time that they arrive on scene, Dracula actually is involved, so it all works out. We also get this interlude where Mr. Chen reports to a still unseen Dr. Sun, who is quite pleased with the acquisition of the vampire brand, who now he has under his complete control and has him revived between drugs and whatever else he used to revive him, conditioning. And Dr. Chen gets rewarded by getting a wish granted. And Dr. Chen is like, well, just serving you is the greatest thing, but my dad's been imprisoned by the Chi Coms and heavily guarded for years. Sure would be nice if he could be... And before he finishes his sentence, he's like, oh, he'll be released. You'll see him in the morning. And they show this whole, like, squad of militia going to this base and freeing all in one panel and freeing this old Confucius-looking man.
So, Steve, this Dr. Chen guy, or Dr. Sun, this is basically Blofeld, right? From the Bond movies? You know, the unseen...
Yeah, I would say so, but there's a reason for the mysteriousness. That's a little more plot-oriented than just, you know, wanting to have it be mysterious for mystery's sake. We'll get there, though. Dracula's own investigation into what is going on with these murders leads him to the home of Paul Beery, who is a dead corpse with the equivalent of, like, a kick me sign pinned to him. It says, don't bury him again. The heck is that? Dracula, of course, goes to bury him again.
Duh.
But the ghoul, the skeleton in the trench coat and the hat, intercepts, having just given this karate chop to Inspector Chelm's traps. And Dracula and the ghoul, they fight. Dracula even beheads him, Jerry, but the skeleton, he just keeps fighting on like it's a Ray Harryhausen scene.
Mm-hmm.
And Dracula pulls the karate chop trick back on the skeleton.
Judo chop!
It's true. Oh, a few times. Like, right to the spine, shattering it in a few places. And that finally puts this thing down.
Steve, I want to go back to this Paul Beery guy that you mentioned. I'm thinking this is a pun on Paul Bearer. What do you think?
Yes. It would have to, that makes perfect sense. I didn't catch it because his name is very close to the slide guitar player for Little Feet, the band. And when I saw it, I just kept jumping to that near coincidence of being a close name. His name is Paul Bearer.
As you do.
And that's just the way my head was working. But yes, I missed it. That's a great pun. See? Dude, you just earned your paycheck.
Woo!
You've got a no prize and a paycheck.
I'm on a roll.
Everything's coming up, Jerry.
Butter. I'm on a roll.
You get to pick from the Halloween basket first. Well, Inspector Chelm, he explains it all to Dracula. He's like, just hear me out, and then you can do anything you want to me, Chelm says to him. Dracula's like, I can do that now. But as long as you talk fast, you know, go ahead, I'll listen for now. This Paul Bearer... he was an occultist, and he had an astrologically significant burial site picked out for himself for when he died. But when the time came, someone else was already buried there.
Oh.
So he had the body exhumed and moved, and that dude is the ghoul.
Oh, and he mad.
Yeah. So Dracula, he's pretty sensitive to that whole burial peace thing, right? He decides to fly off as the issue ends with the skeletal remains, and he's going to make things right.
He's pretty skilled with the use of his limbs in his bat form.
It's true. Issue 17 is the vampire on the train.
Oh, this was a fun one, Steve. Anything on a train is always good. Because where are you going to go? There's no place to hide.
The issue starts with Dracula learning that all four of his London area coffins have been destroyed. He doesn't have to sleep on his home soil, per se, but as long as there's some of that soil in his coffin, it's okay, right? So he can sleep in remote coffins, not on his home turf.
That's right, his flop houses.
But all four of these coffins with his home soil have been destroyed, and at each one of the sites of each of them, one of the Scoobies is laying in wait. And Dracula encounters the one with Blade. Jerry, it's just, it's never a match. He takes him out easily, and this time he's like, listen, this is getting ridiculous. And he decides to bite him.
He definitely bit him. I see the bite marks on the neck.
Yeah.
Blade looks pretty dead, Steve.
Except that Dracula's in a hurry because sun is coming up and he's got no place to rest his head. And this is when he's like, curse me for a fledgling. and I think that's what saves Blade's life, if his life is still there. Because Dracula has to run off in a hurry. But he does comment that, you found my four coffins, but you didn't know I had a fifth. So he goes to the fifth coffin. Well, Dracula, he's not going to settle for just this fifth coffin thing. So now he needs to get more dirt from his homeland, so he's got to take the train back to Transylvania. It's too far to fly. Frank Drake and Rachel Van Helsing are also on board the train and in pursuit.
Of course.
Rachel still visibly scarred on her face from the bat scratches. There's no cure for bat scratch fever. There's also on the train this mysterious German dude who's huddling over his briefcase throughout the issue. And he's got this big security guard guy with him who's wearing an eye patch. And they think they're being chased. They're pretty convinced. And the security guard guy, he thinks it's Frank and Rachel because they're obviously scanning around looking for something. Also on the train, though, Jerry, is Jack Russell. You know who he is?
You mean the dog breed?
Kind of. He's Marvel's own werewolf by night.
And yes!
He's on the train going to Transylvania. Well, after the passengers have dinner, Dracula goes off in search of his own meal.
Man's got to eat.
Yeah, he finds this kid who's kind of wandering off down the hall on the train car.
Steve, you see, people talk about helicopter parents. The reason there are helicopter parents is because of guys like Marv Wolfman scarring us.
Yep. This is the scarring 70s. Us. This is when kids were still hitchhiking and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Hitchhiking was the biggest problem facing our youth if you listen to the after school specials.
We got to get back to those days.
Of the day.
Oh, don't forget Angel Dust.
And Quaaludes. The proliferation of Quaaludes.
Yeah.
So Dracula finds his kid wandering the hall, and he has his little interaction with him, and you're like, he's going to eat the kid. But his mom catches up, and he escorts them back to their cabin and instead feeds on the mom.
Well, you always go for the mom, especially a hot mom. And besides, kids eat so much sugar, they cause cavities. You know? You gotta protect those fangs. Those are your lifeblood.
I don't have any diabetes in my bloodline, Dracula is proud to report.
Fast forward 200 years and he's severely overweight, type 2 diabetic.
Missing a toe.
Darn those kids. Missing a toe. It's funny because it's true.
Frank and Rachel find the mom and report that she's not dead. He just drank a little. Just a tip.
Yes.
Now, thinking Dracula is in pursuit of the briefcase, the documents in this briefcase, the German security eye patch guy seeks out Dracula, and Dracula smashes him around before the guy realizes his total mistake. But then he gets thrown out the window to his death. Well described by Wolfman, the flesh tearing up on the rails below. Dracula gets to throw Frank Drake and Rachel around the train a bit, too, as he'll do. An interlude to the domain of Dr. Sun shows us the now complacent vampire Brand engaged in a series of 12 vampire experiments. He's being tested by Dr. Sun to see if he's worthy. And he continues to impress.
Oh, he's the man.
Yeah, the guy spent 12 of his 27 years behind bars. And
they were the ones he was going to waste anyway, though.
Yeah, true. Back to this deteriorating situation on the train. The German with the briefcase, he leaves his cabin now with a security guard, didn't come back, so he fears the worst. And as he leaves the cabin, he encounters Dracula, and Dracula reveals him his vampiric nature to the guy, and somehow that confirms to the German that he is there to serve his master and get him and his briefcase. Like, this sinks it. And Dracula's just left scratching his head as the guy leaps out of the window with the case in hand, killing himself. Dracula realizes he's close enough now to home that he can just fly home. So he changes into bat form and takes off.
And never paid his fare.
Right. And the issue ends with the briefcase being lifted off of the dead German's body at the side of the tracks by a shadowy agent identifying himself as working for Dr. Sun.
You know, Steve, rumor has it that this is the same briefcase that Jules and Vincent recovered in Pulp Fiction.
And Oscar Goldman used to carry around in the $6 million Man.
No.
Issue 18 is entitled Enter Werewolf by Night and begins a crossover that concludes in Werewolf by Night number 15, which is also written by Wolfman. How could it not be, right?
We have to call him Wolfman when he writes that, though.
And this crossover occurred in the winter of 1974 with a March cover date. The splash page I love has Drac kind of giving himself the finger.
Yes.
Jack Russell, our werewolf at large, is traveling to Transylvania by train along with his mysterious but lovely blonde companion Topaz.
Yes. Yes.
And she goes on to be a player.
Female
too.
Entertainer.
Yeah, she goes on to be a player in the Marvel Universe and Man Thing comics and Doctor Strange comics down the line.
Oh, she's a player.
Jack, he's on a quest to learn more of his father. Because Jack Russell was born Jacob Russoff. That's the family name.
Oh.
And his father was also cursed as a werewolf. This is a bloodline thing. So the train approaches Transylvania in this, I thought, this overly colorful panel that was evocative of, like, the Rainbow Bridge leading to Asgard.
Yes.
Made this, like, shining city in the distance. Dracula returns to his castle. He's all happy to be there and home, and his castle's all restored and everything, and he owns it again, and everything's good. Jack Russell and Topaz, they get rooms at this local lodge tavern place. Jack quickly makes an enemy protecting Topaz. This guy was getting all feely with her, and Jack punches him.
And his name is Scratcher, and he's really proud of it. Just so you know.
And I think Jack punches him because he knows tonight's a full moon.
Yeah, I can get away with this.
Topaz has this ability to keep Jack, even in werewolf form, calm and quiet. She's got this weird power set that pretty much can do whatever needs to be done at the time to the writer's liking.
Yes.
And Jack's new enemy bursts in on them, in on their room, to totally do them wrong, but he is greeted by the werewolf, and it's werewolf time.
Oh, that poor guy never stood a chance.
No. The werewolf, Jack, kills him, but only after, like, tackling him out of the room, throwing him over the balcony, fighting him through the bar, and then tackling him out the door, and then eviscerating him on the street.
Murdered in the streets!
Yep.
Just outside Ye Old Boot Inn.
Now, very serendipitously here, Jerry, Dracula just then shows up and chooses Topaz as his next meal, but he is given pause by detecting her power. And that's just enough time for the werewolf to strike, and it's on like Donkey Kong. This is Godzilla versus King Kong. This is this is the werewolf versus Dracula.
Do you think this is one of those moments that kids were talking about on the playground the next day? Like, yeah. We finally get to see it. We finally get to see the werewolf fight the vampire.
It's one of those ones you definitely brought to see, show your friend to check out as you're reading them on your buddy's deck or back lawn or on the room of their floor.
Right.
Trading. You read this one, I'll read that one. Well, Dracula mingles with the werewolf here a little bit, and then he flees and feeds on some other poor chick in an alley before returning home.
And Steve, I just want to say that this girl, this panel before he attacks her, is probably my favorite panel that they did in this book.
Wow.
In any issue we've read. It's perfect.
It is.
The expression on her face, the way she's rendered, everything is flawless. And she knows she's about to die. I'm sad for her.
Oh, remember how Blade got fanged by Dracula before forcing him to flee London?
Yeah, I remember that.
Well, Quincy Harker finds him, sees the marks, and decides to spare him the future of, as a vampire with a stake thrust to the chest. So he lifts his stake, lifts it.
No, don't, no!
That's all we get for now.
Ah.
Jack and Topaz are exploring Russoff Manor. And Jack is thinking back to his youth and his father's death by silver bullet. And he finds a locked diary. Also, this... I guess it's like a hidden observation point with this telescope pointed at Castle Dracula in the foggy distance. Which, you know, by my knowledge, isn't so good for optics.
No, looking through the fog. It's also not good to know that your dad is a creeper peeper.
Well, why spy on Dracula, though? They go to Castle Dracula to find the answers. And Dracula immediately discovers them approaching. But that's only after he's, like, celebrating having new coffins shipped off to London so he may return there, which he plans to do tomorrow. Nothing's going to get in the way of those plans.
Nope.
Dracula absconds with Topaz, and Jack wolfs out and takes on Dracula again. And it's all kinds of fierce and fangy.
Yeah, and I love... They show them fighting in the foreground and then their shadows duking it out in the background. It's cool.
The story continues over to Werewolf by Night 15, which right on the cover tells you that the story preceded in Tomb of Dracula 18, which is great. You can't go wrong. They were both on the stands the same month. And Werewolf by Night 15 has art by Mike Plug and Frank Chiaramonte.
Oh, so good.
So Chiaramonte is not always the tightest inker on Plug's stuff, and I don't know if he's being as true to the pencils or if he is I find some of the faces were done really overly softly and blankly, and I'm wondering if we had some sort of Coletta type situation going on here where some backgrounds weren't done as lushly or some details weren't done as much, because maybe I'm just thinking of Plug at his best, but I'm used to a little bit more. And on some pages, it's just what I expect. Other places, I found it to be pretty inconsistent. I'm putting it on Chiaramonte.
Well, if you're going to criticize, then I think you should.
I'm a Kickstarter backer of Plug's new art book, so I'm all in the Plug camp. I'm letting my bias be known.
As soon as I saw that was going to make it, I decided to wait for Amazon.
Oh, but I considered that, but then saw what it was hitting for the extras things, and the stretch goals were really cool. There's a whole separate book of his Dark Crystal storyboards.
Oh yeah,
they said it was like a 20-page book or something that's going to come with it. Well, I don't know, should be interesting. But anyway, and a poster and whatever. But so this issue opens up with the fight of the century raging on. And, you know, the art difference is stark. But, boy, does Plug draw a fantastic werewolf, doesn't he? Even though it's so...
He does.
Man.
It's my favorite version.
Yeah, I could see that. No, I really like Val Mayrick's, though.
Yeah.
And Bill Sienkiewicz. And those Moon Knight issues later on.
But, right.
Until Dracula starts being pushed away by Topaz's power... You know, the fight is really going toe-to-toe, and when Dracula feels the push, he goes with it. And just like his last encounter with the werewolf, he flees in bat form and goes and feeds on some poor Transylvanian girl before going home.
Just ain't right.
Now, in a really awkward storytelling move, we shift mid-page, with no caption or dialogue box or anything, to Rachel Van Helsing and Frank Drake, helicoptering into the area in a small two-seater copter piloted by Drake, right?
I was so confused at this point. I thought we were still with Jack and Topaz.
And what's weird is they weren't in part one of the crossover in the Tomb of Dracula issue 18. So readers of Werewolf by Night, who picked up issue 18 of Tomb of Dracula to get the story, still don't know who these two are. And Marv and Roy... don't help. much at all. Other than given the dialogue that Frank used to own the castle, you don't get anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of this storytelling, fractured type storytelling, is what ended up having the pendulum swing the other way for like the next decade, because we're only a few years away from Shooter taking over with his mantra that we all know by heart of every comic is somebody's first, right?
So, yeah.
And certainly when we go back, it seems so dated now that we're used to having those exposition pages at the beginning, catch-up pages at the beginning of each issue in the modern era of how it was thrown into stories of how superheroes explained who they were and who their powers were and what had just been going on in the story arc all in the first few pages and how that was incorporated into the story and how it wasted story pages to some extent. But I think this is the reason why, right? It's like, oh, I kind of missed that. Like, no one knows what's going on here. But anyway.
Well, if you color two guys with the same colored hair and two girls with the same colored hair and the same features, and then you shift from one to the other mid-page, that happens.
But we do know who these characters are, because we've been reading this since the beginning, and so does Ploog, because he includes Rachel's facial scarring. Dracula, he attacks the duo in the helicopter in bat form. Like you said, he has good control of those claws, Jerry.
Yes.
He lands on Drake's head and digs his claws into his head and forces them into a hard landing before he takes back off. Dracula, that is. And Topaz and Jack, meanwhile, get that diary open thanks to Topaz's power.
Mm-hmm.
And we learn that Dracula killed one of Jack's ancestor, Russoff's wife. And then that Russoff went into Castle Dracula and staked Dracula dead. But while he was there, he hears rustling in another room and learns of a prisoner and rescues this female prisoner, Lydia, who Dracula had. And it turns out that she was a werewolf. She bites the Russoff, and now the Russoff bloodline is cursed.
What kind of thanks is that?
Right. And then this is crazy, too. The reader, again, here gets one of the most awkward scene change page turns that I ever recall seeing. And it's when Topaz asks Jack if he still wants to take on Dracula. And then on the next page, without any caption box, again, Frank Drake is answering presumably the same question asked by Rachel to Rachel.
I imagine this was supposed to be clever because it's the question everyone's asking.
I mean, the answer,
but I can't keep it straight.
The answer is yes, of course. Frank is citing Elizabeth Harker's death in Tomb of Dracula issue 12 as like his motivation. He doesn't even mention his love Jeannie from Conway's opening issues.
Well, that was a long time ago.
Yeah, and Conway.
And Conway.
It's also not clear where the heck Rachel and Frank are in this room. They're in some hotel room safe. But when we last saw them, they were landing the copter in the countryside. And when we next see them, they're out in that same countryside. Really weird, so I'm not sure.
Shrug. Comics.
This next scene leads to a great head-scratcher, too, but it takes a minute to get there. Dracula has himself this hearty, sinister laugh as he comes across the abandoned helicopter in the field.
Yes.
And he destroys the flight controls, preventing any chance for escape.
Check.
Then Topaz and Jack, they come up with this plan and they enact it. She uses her do anything powers to allow Jack some control over his werewolf form. Then they engage Dracula near the helicopter, and Dracula and the werewolf fight again, but this time Dracula immediately recognizes the difference. This wolf is like thinking and fighting, you know? He's fighting with intent. Topaz is holding the second book of sins, which was that the diary or is that the other book that opened the stairs to the diary? I'm not sure. That's why I mentioned my confusion, slight confusion there. But relative to the other confusions in this issue, that I'm letting this one slide.
Yeah.
But this book has this incantation that's dangerous to Dracula's existence and the existence of all vampires. Which sounds to me a lot like Roger Stern's nearly a decade later whole thing of the Montesi formula in the Darkhold.
Yes, that's what I was wondering if this was. Like, does it ever get revealed that that's what this is, or is that a wholly new creation of Stern's?
Yeah, it's not so wholly new, because here's that exact concept.
Well, the book itself is about to become holy,
true,
thanks to Rachel and her trusty crossbow.
Yep, blasted.
And you know it's coming because she yelled to tell you that it was.
Yep. And Dracula is totally looking to retrieve this book, but again, he gets assaulted by the werewolf, which allows Rachel, and presumably Drake, because we don't see him in the last two panels afterwards, even though we're getting what looks to be a group shot.
Mm-hmm.
Van Helsing escapes in the helicopter and makes a quick getaway. And I'm like, wait, what? Wasn't it sabotaged by Dracula?
Yes, it was indeed. Maybe. But he didn't have time to do a thorough job.
Or maybe he doesn't know copters too good.
Well, he is 600 years old or whatever.
He chases down that copter in bat form, leaving the issue and letting Jack and Topaz have their own title back.
Whew.
Issue 19 is Snowbound in Hell. This opens with Dracula and Rachel. They are trudging across a frozen tundra, mile after mile. Trudging across the tundra.
Is to go trudging across the tundra, mile after mile. Trudging across the tundra.
And disorienting, just as disorienting as this blizzard is to them, is this scene to the reader, because they were just on a helicopter moments ago. What's going on?
Didn't this remind you, though, of Hank and Jean after the Magneto volcano base exploded?
It sure did. Steve, that was the first thing I thought of, and I guess that's probably not a surprise.
Well, Dracula is making an effort to keep Rachel alive. Why? Well, he's hungry now, but he might be really hungry later if they are still stuck in this snowy mess. And Dracula finds them a cave. He makes them a fire. We learn that Rachel's femur is broken.
That's bad, Steve.
Yeah. Dracula also secures them food. He attacks a bighorn sheep, mountain goat type thing, and he drinks from the goat, vowing never to do that again. but then cooks up with the fire, and Rachel has a meal and everything. Then we get our flashback around the campfire.
Uh-huh.
Rachel, as we know, was escaping in the copter with the pages that held the spell that could destroy all vampires, right?
And, magically, a pilot. Huh?
Dude, what is up with that? See, Dracula's pursuing them, and he latches onto the landing rails of the copter and climbs aboard, and it's a two-seater, and Rachel isn't piloting it. She's trying to butt Drac away with the butt of her rifle, make them the butt of her joke.
Ah.
But Dracula grabs the pilot, which is some black guy. Where did he come from?
This must be Blade, right? Nope.
And throws the black guy, the pilot, overboard to a ghastly death.
And that ain't right.
And then Drac is behind the wheel, right? In the copter that he supposedly sabotaged to not be able to fly.
And Rachel's like, joke's on you, I don't know how to fly this thing.
And we know from Dracula's lousy sabotaging job, sabotage, he doesn't know copters that well. We've established that, and he crashes the copter head-on into a mountain.
That's gonna leave a mark.
Oof. And so that's how they got stranded, and that's how Rachel broke her thigh. And now they're stuck in the Transylvanian Alps, several days to the nearest other humans, hence Dracula's need to keep Rachel alive.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Sun, meanwhile, we flash to him, and he's got a final test for Vampire Brand. It's to fly through the rings of fire. I'm like, who is this guy? Johnny Cash?
Hell is a burning thing.
That's right.
And it means a fiery ring.
It's a fiery ring.
Brand does it. He flies through the gauntlet, even tolerating his wings aflame, you know, facing his fear for Dr. Sun. And with Mr. Chen out of the picture, Mr. Lo is getting all the credit now from Dr. Sun.
And rightly so.
Rachel, while they're hiking through the tundra and all that, she's pretty sneaky. She knows sunrise is approaching and that Dracula needs to find a cave to rest. So she, like, engages in these delaying tactics of, like, falling and, you know, hoping that he'll run out of time and get caught in the sun. And, oh, yeah, remember how Quincy Harker, like, I don't know, like 25 minutes ago was about to plunge his stake into Blade, who had been fanged?
And boy, is his arm tired.
Yeah, well, Blade wakes and he catches it in his hand.
So what?
How did Blade survive? Well, they figure, secondary to Blade's unusual birth scenario, that Blade is immune to the vampire bite.
How about that?
Yeah, and that totally emboldens Blade to, like, go back out on the hunt, right? He's like, oh, nothing's going to be able to stop me now.
I bet I can think of some things that could stop him.
And did we mention that Rachel's sneaky? She waits for Dracula to sleep, and then she tries to stake him, but Dracula was faking.
Of course he was.
Denies her further rest, and they head back out into the tundra. And Dracula gets attacked by a bighorn sheep goat thing.
That is winning.
Yeah, and I guess that's what you get for killing the other one, right? Like you said, he's crushing Dracula, and Rachel takes a gun and shoots the sheep.
What?
Saves Dracula. And just then they get spotted by another helicopter, and it's Drake. He's in a copter. We still don't know what happened with him, how he, whatever, but he's there shooting wooden bullets at Dracula.
Of course they're wooden bullets.
And Dracula's like, oh, well, shoot, I'm going to eat you now then, because I'm not going to wait any longer, and it's too late. The bullets keep him at bay. Rachel is rescued, and it's hot chocolate time, Claremont style.
Yes! Hot chocolate.
And now, issue 20 and 21 are a two-parter, and I know you didn't get to them, Jerry, but I got to throw them at you. Because issues 20 and 21, to wrap up this excursion into Tomb of Dracula excellence, it finally addresses this whole Dr. Sun subplot. And it feels like it's the season finale to, like, the second season of Tomb of Dracula, if you can look at it that way. Chronologically, after this is when the story moves into some of the giant size Dracula, Tomb of Draculas and things, and there's some other artists involved, at least when you're looking at it in collected form. So, in issues 20 and 21, we get Dracula weak. He's still wandering these snowy mountains, Jerry. He hasn't fed in days, thanks to Rachel.
She's so selfish.
And Rachel and Frank, they keep refueling and warming up and coming back and finding him and shooting more wooden bullets at him and shooting him down, right? And keeping him from making any progress. He eventually drops unconscious. Dracula does. In the meantime, we learn a story of Rachel's childhood, her grandfather's death at Dracula's hand, and her parents died at Dracula's hand too. And she would have perished that night, but Quincy Harker arrived in a timely manner, and it was the first time he used those blasted armrest darts, and it totally chased Dracula away, instead of now when he laughs at it. And on one of those mountain passes in the copter, Rachel and Frank, they spot this cave that has man-made walls and seems mysterious, so they stop to investigate. And sure enough, that's where Dracula's been taken. We get a interlude of Vampire Brand finally meeting Dr. Sun face to lobe.
Jerry, Loeb?
Dr. Sun is a disembodied brain in a box.
Yes!
That's why we've never seen his face or even his hand petting a white kitten or anything. So Dracula awakens. He's bound in these garlic-flavored chains. And he was found and gathered up by Dr. Sun. I mean, things like this, that really gets the old plot moving along.
Mm-hmm.
And how did Dr. Sun's agents know so much about Dracula?
Tell me!
They had a former inside man. Your old pal and mine, Clifton Graves.
What? Covered in stitches.
He's all sewn up like Frankenstein's monster.
Yes!
But he's coherent, and he's still just as much of a jerk as he always was. And he did blow up on that boat, but Dr. Sun's men rescued him, and they totally $6 million manned him.
That's awesome.
This ticks off Dracula. He breaks his bonds, garlic or not. He eats the Chinaman, busts up Clifton some, and then Frank and Rachel enter. Rachel calls her shot again before firing the crossbow.
Got to!
And Dracula uses that old use someone as a shield trick with Clifton. Now he's dead, Jerry.
Are we sure?
I'm pretty sure. Not totally sure, but I'm pretty sure.
I love that they would bring him back for two pages.
Well, but all along, he's the mysterious shadow who collected the briefcase. He's the one, like, he's been working, he's been one of the agents with Dr. Sun.
I like it.
And in this scene, the funniest thing, though, Jerry, is that Frank, at the same time, is holding off these two soldiers that have, like, submachine guns, and all he's got is a pistol. Like, in one panel, he's shooting one guy who's standing there, and then, like, six panels later, he's, like, just shooting the other guy who's standing there. Funny.
It's not the size of the gun, it's how you use it.
I'll hold them off. Before they even get a shot off. Dr. Sun steps in. Well, I use that term not literally. Dr. Sun takes control of the situation with this stasis ray that immobilizes Frank, Rachel, and Dracula.
Uh-oh.
And it's really weird because you see Vampire Brand at the controls. This guy can do it all now. And Dr. Sun explains his story. In the 60s, a Chi-Com general lost trust in one of his experimental project doctors, Dr. Sun, and ironically uses him as the test subject for their experiment with isolating a brain and using it to control computers. And it was a horrific scene, too, because as he's being led in there and it's being explained what's going to happen to him, and that the general said not to use anesthetic to punish him, and the doctor who's performing the operation has to do that because he wants to win this general's favor, or not lose favor at least. And then as he's about to make the incision, he reveals that he's Dr. Sun's son, S-O-N.
Oh man.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. So this is Dr. Sun now. He is made too powerful though, and kills his masters, and has since, in the almost decade since, has set up this network of operations. Dr. Sun releases Dracula from the stasis to test him against Brand. And sure enough, Dracula can't control Brand as he can control other vampires. Dig it, man, dig it. Dracula, he's fought Brand twice before. They've each come out on top once, and this time it's a stalemate. Dracula ends up getting staked by Brand while he's delivering the knockout blow to Brand's head. So they both go down. When Dracula wakes up, he's strapped to a machine, Jerry. And Dr. Sun reveals his dilemma and the motivation behind his plan. He needs a steady supply of blood to be pumped through him in that box. And by him, I mean his brain.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants to use this machine, there's a seat on either side, to transfer Dracula's powers over other vampires to Brand. And then use Brand to control vampires to collect blood for him. They can go around and they can just put in the tip, Jerry. And they can take just enough blood from their victims to sustain themselves and bring the rest back to Dr. Sun. Therefore, it's still being in the food chain that already exists, and therefore no new victims or no new scenario of missing blood is going to pop up on anyone's radar that would lead them to Dr. Sun. This predatory behavior is already happening. He's just looking to harness it for his advantage. So, with Dr. Sun's scheme and endgame identified, we get a two-page spread of the machine in operation after the switch is flipped. Dracula's in one chair, Brand is in the other, and the diabolical Dr. Sun is in the middle. And
living it up.
Jerry, it's colon tech. Ugh. It's like
yeah,
very iron and blocky and cold and rusty. And this ain't Kirby tech, buddy.
No, but it does have colon crackle.
It does.
And colon crackle is as painful as it sounds.
There's so much colon crackle that Brand feels the power, and it's coming into him, it's working, and he's now ready for the final battle with Dracula.
Steve, The crackle means it's working.
It's true. The Dracula, he decides to have a mid-fight snack to build up his strength via another Chinaman, you know, scientist. But it's not enough. Brand sets the machine ablaze by slamming Dracula into it and then thrusts Dracula into the blazing flames.
No, not Dracula.
Brand is tough. Then he looks to kill Drake and Van Helsing, but instead chooses to strike out at his former master first, Dr. Sun. He, again, just as his Chi-Com masters made Dr. Sun too powerful, Dr. Sun has made Drake too powerful.
Hmm.
But
no voodoo doll for Dr. Sun, I'm betting.
No, but he's a little smarter than Faust there. Dr. Sun's box, the housing that holds the box, it's booby-trapped. So when Brand goes to grab it, he goes up in flames. Poof. Then Dr. Sun teleports away to another base before announcing that there are explosives set to go off in this one.
Pretty sneaky, sis.
Yep. Rachel and Frank, they run out of there and escape via that helicopter. And then the reader sees a large bat flying away before the base explodes. Boom. And that's how it ends. Satisfying, though, right?
Heck yeah.
You get to see what the deal was with Dr. Sun. It's some crazy science fiction-y thing. We get the closure of the whole vampire Brand guy. Ay, ay, ay. And things are left with our gang of adventurers thinking Dracula dead.
Well, let's hope so. Now we know.
All right, Jerry, thank you. This was awesome to do. Appreciate you delving into all this material with me.
It is always a pleasure.
I am going to keep reading this stuff, but not necessarily right for next episode, unless you're really hot to do so. But I would love to keep checking in with you on this material if you're up for it.
Let's make it a date. I'll be back.
Now,
sorry, everyone.
You guys, you're going to want to stick around now, though, Jerry, because to end this episode, I've got something special for you and the listeners. Because issue number 19, the Snowbound in Hell issue with Rachel and Dracula trudging across the tundra, that was a Power Records 45 record in the 70s that came along with a comic book that you flipped the page when the little tone went off and you could read along.
Whoa.
And I've got it for you.
What?
That's right. How cool is that? So now you've heard Jerry and I talk about it, and now you can hear how the Power Records gang handled it on a format that preceded compact discs, preceded Maxell MP3s, or Maxell, what were they? No, XL2s, that's what they were. Gold tapes.
Yeah.
Back in the days of the 45 and the, what was the other, 33?
Yeah.
Revolutions per minute. The RPMs, Jerry, here they are, coming your way. I turned the RPMs into MP3s.
Turn it to 11.
All right, thanks, Jerry. Happy Halloween, everybody.
Happy Halloween, everybody!
Until Dracula learns how a helicopter works, make mine marvel.
Later.
The mountains heaved in agony. A winter storm in the Transylvanian Alps raged more intense and furious with each passing moment. This winter would be harsh indeed for these long-weathered mountains, but they would survive. Yes, the Alps would survive. But will a very lost Dracula and Rachel Van Helsing survive as well? Power Records presents Terror in the Snow.
I can hardly see. Please rest. Please, I'm about to collapse.
We move on, Van Helsing. To stay here would mean the death of both of us.
Then I won't go on any further. I don't care if I die. If I take you along with me.
You will move, woman. Have no choice. What?
Shit! I'm falling!
You shall not be so lucky to fall to your death. Not while I need you more alive. For almost 20 years I have sought to slay you, to add your name to my ever-growing legions. now. Now I must prevent your death at all costs. For the moment, at least, I must be your savior. So now, my lifelong huntress, we move on. And though it aches us both, we must cooperate. Our survival depends on it.
On they trek aimlessly through the endless blizzard until they find a cave.
I have prepared the fire for you, Van Helsing. Rest by it quietly. Your hurts will soon pass.
Will the broken bones heal themselves too, Dracula?
I provide you warmth, comfort, and shortly food. What else could you want?
What I've sought for all these years, Dracula, your final and everlasting death, I owe you for the countless horrors you committed against me, to my family, to the world. Even if I must forfeit my own life, I'll see the day that you're long dead and buried.
Hardly, my dear. You can barely stand on that foot, let alone fight me. No, I'd say for now, you will simply do as I command. I see your dinner has finally arrived, my dear. Pardon me, please, while I tend to it. Remain where you are, great goat. Tonight you will fill the stomachs of two hungry souls.
The giant mountain goat merely nods its wide horned head and waits. As death descends madly upon it, it tries to shake loose its attacker, but it fails.
The taste is bitter and wretched, yet still I feel strength again flow through my bones. I protect the one I have ever sought to slay. I feed upon the blood of an impure beast. Yes, since the crash, much has been changed. Too much! And all because Van Helsing found the second book of sin. I remember how we fought for possession of the book. Those ancient scrolls inscribed with a spell to utterly destroy all vampires, including myself. But as we struggled, Rachel Van Helsing grasped the crumbling pages and made her escape. I instantly knew the dangers to me and my legions if she could translate the symbols and spells, and so I followed her. Her helicopter rose quickly through the Transylvanian winter countryside. I caught onto the machine's lower railings, and I thrust myself into the cabin.
Dracula! I don't know how you got in here, but you're not staying. If that book is so important to you, there's no way I'm going to let you get it.
Woman, you are a fool. What makes you believe you can keep possession of anything I desire? But we shall discuss the papers in a moment, after I rid us of some unneeded baggage.
What are you doing? Stay away from me! Stay away!
God, you killed him without even a moment's care. You're a monster. An inhuman monster.
His life is unimportant.
Then you're in for a rude awakening, Dracula. He was the pilot, and I haven't the slightest notion on how to fly this. And something tells me neither do you. You're already miles off course, heading into the Transylvanian Alps.
I can see that, Van Helsing. Yes, already there is snow and ice. We must turn back.
And how are we going to accomplish that, Dracula? As I told you, I'm not a pilot.
Then we shall simply crash. And though I shall survive, my dear, I doubt if you will. Brace yourself, woman, and we shall see if the fates are kind to you this night. As the giant helicopter smashed into a great white peak, which suddenly jutted before it, I live as always before. I survive where others perish. But the book, the cause of all this madness, little matters now in this desolate wilderness. We are so far from civilization that none shall ever find this. Van Helsing awakens. Good.
I can't move. I think it's broken.
That will not do on the long journey before us. You will need a bandage.
No! Leave it alone! You're hurting it.
Silence, woman. Until this heals, you'll have to live with pain, which may keep your mind off attacking me for a while. Now, come with me. If we are to reach other humans, we must begin.
Why are you doing this for me? Why don't you just take my blood and be done with it? You've wanted me dead for years.
I still do, my dear. But common sense tells me not to give in to my lusts. If I were to take your blood now, I may not find any for days. Plus, you are being kept alive as an emergency measure. Think on that, my dear Nelson, and you shall see the futility of your situation. Enjoying your meal, Van Helsing. Good.
You're thinking of fattening me up for the final slaughter. Dracula, you've got a lot to learn.
Little matter, Van Helsing. I will eventually win. I have always won my battles.
Maybe not this time, Dracula. The sun will be up soon, and when you go to sleep, not even my broken leg will stop me from slaying you. And if I can't slay you, then I'll kill myself. In such a way, you'll get no blood from me.
My dear, you know as I do that you'll never kill yourself. Not until the final moment you are positive your death would cause my own. Do not try lying to a master liar, woman. It will do you no good.
The brief respite is over. Slowly and painfully, the strange duo press on, advancing against nature's fury and the approach of daylight.
Struggling is useless, Van Helsing. I have only 1 hour more to travel before the sun rises, and I aim to have traveled far in that time.
Then I'll try anything to delay that, Dracula.
What?
Rachel Van Helsing flings herself from the snowbound peak and falls, taking a suddenly off-balanced Dracula down with her.
Witch! Because of you, we might both be doomed!
But Rachel doesn't answer. Down they continue to plunge, until the rope snaps taut about the rock, which Rachel tied it to moments before, assuring herself a delay in their travels, but not a deadly one.
Woman, you're trying my patience too far. I may yet taste your blood and take my chances alone.
No! I think you'll keep me alive and risk more trouble than have me dead and perhaps kill yourself as well.
Really, my dear, I doubt that. You see, even if I am dead, one of my legions will find me and resurrect me. Frustrated, dear Van Helsing, I knew you would be. Humans always find it impossible to accept a being who can live forever. Immortality frightens those who fail to understand it completely. Perhaps you should learn what it means to taste eternity on your lips. Would you like that, Van Helsing? Would you like that? Well, worry not this night, my dear. You'll not become a vampire until I can resist the bloodlust no more. Now, into this cave. We will spend the morning hours here. There shall be another long night tomorrow, Van Helsing. So plot not to slay me and rest instead. You will need your sleep.
Her body aching with pain, Rachel Van Helsing closes her eyes, but not to sleep. She still has a mission to perform this morning, and she will not rest until the deed is done. All the while through these daylight hours, Dracula sleeps, his strength returning to his weary bones. But Rachel Van Helsing still waits for the moment she will finally slay the dreaded Lord of Vampires. And at long last, that moment is now. Silently, she rises, stifling the aching pain she feels grow in her leg, and holding the stake she has kept hidden in her parka since before she began this ill-fated journey, she treads softly towards the sleeping figure. He doesn't move, and with a bitter smile on her lips, she thrusts down and misses.
You foolish female! Did you truly believe you could take Dracula unawares? Now there shall be no rest for you, Van Helsing.
I expect nothing from you, Dracula. Except to kill you when I can.
Still, you persist, my dear. You waste your time on fantasies, then. Now move, or be dragged through the snow and ice.
Perhaps it's fatigue, bloodthirst. But Dracula does not sense the hulking form which follows his path. Until it is too late, that is.
What?
The great beast attacks. The Lord of Vampires has been too long without blood. And so it is Dracula who falls to the snow-covered mountains. And it is Dracula who screams as salivating teeth dig through his flesh. Rachel Van Helsing trembles at the sight of the two thrashing forms. And though she fights the urge, her hand almost involuntarily reaches for her gun. And she fires. There is a sudden and horrifying cry. And the great beast falls back dead.
God, I so desperately wanted it to kill you. I couldn't let it. I just couldn't.
Of course, my dear. You had no other choice.
They're somewhere down there. Pilot, keep flying.
I don't know how much longer we can go, Mr. Drake. The wind's acting up pretty bad.
You'll keep this crate flying until I've found them. Wait, they're down there. And Rachel's walking on her own. Okay, pilot, lower away.
That helicopter. Frank?
Frank!
Come back here, woman! The time has finally come for me to taste your blood. Drake will not help you.
No, my dear. You shall finally learn the ecstasy of vampirism.
No! You'll never have me, Dracula. Never!
Yes. I shall derive great pleasure from this moment. But no! They're firing wooden bullets at me! I must escape their path. Yes, Fantasy. I'll see if he wants you, or if he'll abandon you to still hunt me.
They're splitting up, Mr. Drake. Should we land or go after the man?
I can't leave Rachel out there to die of exposure. Land the copter, pilot.
A few moments later, and...
Frank, you've got to find him. Kill him.
Calm down, honey. After you've warmed up a bit, we'll discuss it. But now, pilot, head back to Transylvania.
Back to Transylvania, Frank? We can't stop now. This may finally be our chance to destroy Dracula. We can't give up now. We can't.
You've got a definite stubborn streak in you, little lady. Why?
I don't want to bore you, darling.
Consider me a captive audience. Bore on.
You know of my grandfather, Abraham Van Helsing, and of his battles with Dracula, and how all believed the vampire had been killed. But he wasn't. Years later, the fiend returned and murdered grandfather. Still, he wasn't done with our family. When I was 9, he killed my parents as I watched helpless in horror. Even as he then moved to slay me...
With your death, young Rachel, the Van Helsing name shall be no more.
His fangs started for my neck.
Hold it, Dracula. Don't even look at the girl. She'll not be your victim tonight.
Quincy Harker, my family's longtime friend, burst through the door and fired his jet-propelled wooden darts from his wheelchair.
So, you've added another new device to your arsenal, eh, Harker? Well, keep the girl for now, old friend, but beware. There will come a time when she will be mine.
When the echo of that cold laughter faded, the reality of what had happened rushed at me.
Come to me, Rachel. You've gone through far too much for a girl your age. Far too much for any person.
Quincy took me into his home, raised me into womanhood. Does that explain why I'm, as you say, so stubborn? Does it, Frank?
There is no answer, nor is there a need for one. But below...
They're gone at last, searching elsewhere on this mountainside. Weak as I am, I must try to make my way to safety, or perish in the attempt to fly. I feel my insides shriveling from blood loss. I can remain here no longer. I have no choice but to brave the storm as a night-winged bat. No! Its force is too great, too powerful. It is impossible to fly through. Then am I to be trapped in this hellish wasteland forever?
It appears not, as...
What? Hey, shooting wounded, numbing my arm! How? How? So Van Helsing and Drake are back, attacking me once more. I must flee before they can attack on you.
For a moment, a wobbling, unsure Dracula hesitates as he stares at the bottomless chasm before him. Then he leaps and plunges ever downward toward his apparently unpreventable destruction.
What? He's gone? But it can't be. It can't. There's a cave for him to hide it.
Any way for him to be hiding in a snowbank, Frank?
Maybe.
Keep searching, Frank. We'll finish him off as soon as we find him.
If we find him, you mean Rachel. It's that very big if which prevented us from slaying him years ago.
This time he's bound to be finished, Frank. He's weak. Weaker than he's been for years.
I hope you're right, Rachel. But he's managed to survive almost half an eternity. So let's pray this time we didn't muff it. Because if we did, if he's alive...
There.
Too bad for us all. Too bad for us all.